Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. This week we're talking about the problem of Brexit, again, but it's a big problem. We're also talking about the late President Bush, Ukraine, Russia, INF Treaty, G20, tariffs. Should be an interesting podcast. Thank you very much for listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this evening. And as I begin the program, just to advise you, this portion has been pre-recorded to accommodate our foreign editor's sleeping arrangement. It's going to be nearly 11 a.m. or 11 p.m. his time as we air this program, since he is some 5 hours ahead of us. Joining us from London, England, Tom Arms. Tom, good afternoon, good evening to you, sir.
Good evening to you. And, you know, it's only about just after 4 o'clock here, and you always ask about the weather. It's dark outside.
Really?
Yes.
So, and that's because you actually have much shorter days there.
We're on the same latitude as Siberia.
Right. And
Calgary in Canada.
And, well, you know, the relationship with Siberia among some of our listeners who have talked to me about this are saying that there's some similarity, not only in light, but, basically the more socialist opinions that we hear from time to time. Tom.
Oh, they're wrong. Again.
Tom, very quickly, I have noticed that there's been some significant weather issues there in the United Kingdom, there in Great Britain.
Well, last week we had some storms. No, nothing to really worry about too much. Nothing, you know, like on par with what you had earlier in the year.
All right.
It did mean that one day I couldn't go cycling because it was too windy. But that's about it.
Oh, all right. Okay.
I miss my cycling days.
And we miss them for you. Tom, of course, let's talk about some issues here that are close to home, and then we're going to move on to major issues there close to your community of London. But the first topic on tap today is that of the funeral for the late and now, of course, highly recognized past president, Herbert Walker Bush. And I'm curious, what has been the coverage of his passing, and what is the opinion of President Bush?
Well, let me first start by saying I actually interviewed him when he was the vice president, and I found him an absolutely charming man. I think the general opinion is that he was several things. One, that his passing marks the end of the era of bipartisanship, that they regard him as the last real bipartisan president. That he was great on foreign policy, possibly one of the most brilliant foreign affairs specialists that you've ever had in the White House, but not so good on the domestic front, which is the reason why he was not reelected. They're especially full of praise for him for the way that he handled the end of the Cold War. Mm-hmm. Instead of crowing about, you know, how wonderful we are, he realized that if he was going to have any sort of relationship with the Russians, he had to do it quietly. And the same with the first Gulf War.
Okay. And by the way, how is that Gulf War, recovered? Is it being discussed in relationship to the death of Herbert Walker Bush? Of course, it happened under his administration. And it is.
And it's being discussed in the context of that's the way to do it.
Okay.
You know, that what he did was he made certain he had full UN support. He had every country conceivable working with him. And when the job was done, it was done, and he withdrew.
Right.
He had a clear goal. He achieved the goal, and he exited.
All right, that's an interesting observation. And of course, the funeral is underway as we speak this morning here, our time, this afternoon, your time there. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us with viewpoints around the world. Tom, it is interesting. You made one comment about President Herbert Walker Bush being the last partisan, last bipartisan president. And I would argue that President Clinton was, because he was able to work out a negotiated deal with a very strong Republican House and Senate, and following his midterm elections. But we'll leave it at that. I just find that
I think if I could just insert that he was the end of bipartisan politics, not necessarily the last bipartisan president.
Okay.
And that Clinton inherited Newt Gingrich, right, which a lot of people here think sparked the end of bipartisan politics.
Oh, on the contrary, we would argue that it initiated it. But okay, let's talk here very quickly in light of the fact that we're talking about the U.S., the topic of the Russian investigation here in the U.S., and of course, some concerns related, and you may not have seen this, Michael Flynn has apparently pleaded to the fact that he was working for President Erdogan while he was NSA director working for President Clinton, which is an interesting dynamic. My question is the topic of the Russian investigation being highly reported right now, or are other things kicking that topic off the front pages?
A lot of it's going off the front pages, and we'll come to things like Brexit in a moment, which is obviously very much on the front pages here, right across Europe. But you know, the Mueller investigation is proceeding, and it's being watched with great interest. The Erdogan connection, I haven't seen it. I don't know when it came out.
Broke today.
The fact that Flynn is unlikely to spend any time in jail, mm-hmm, has been reported. And the fact that, Cohen, has admitted that he lied to Congress has been reported, and the possibility that Donald Trump, or the allegation that Donald Trump offered Cohen a pardon before there was anything to pardon.
Well, that of course is all supposition. Quick question.
Yeah, that's why I said allegations.
Allegations. Quick question.
These all the things have been reported this week.
Right. And a quick question for you amidst all of this. And, of course, we're going to get into the Russian connection related to NATO and the disputes. The topic, and a quick question on this one, because we've not listed this on our list of topics today. And that, of course, is China and tariffs and the U.S. Is this something of interest to the European community right now in light of the fact that the president left the G20 with supposedly an arrangement with President Xi Jinping of China, but now there's some questions. Is there coverage of that as well?
Absolutely. You know, they were all cheering after the G20 summit, and people were actually full of praise for President Trump. Not praise, but, you know, they were saying that it looks as if he might have handled it right.
Mm-hmm.
By threatening tariffs, by introducing some tariffs and threatening bigger ones, he may have achieved his end result, and it was a desirable end result. But the stock market started to reflect that.
Right.
And various other people started to reflect that. Then he puts out a tweet saying, well, actually, I may change my mind. I am Mr. Tariff Man anyway.
Right.
and all of a sudden they say, why did you say that? You were doing so well. And of course, as we know, the stock market's plunged. And
what about
introducing that element of uncertainty, which people are just
very, very
in
concerned.
Such an uncertain world, they don't need more.
Right. The other question associated with that, what about the European economy as a result? Has that been influenced by the dispute between China and the U.S.?
Yes, of course it is, because, you know, it affects These days, everything is interconnected. You know,
okay.
The windscreen wipers might be made in Amsterdam. The brakes could be made in Brazil or Mexico, and the car is assembled, and something else. The tires are made in China, and the car is assembled in Detroit. And so if tariffs go up at any point in the supply chain, it affects the entire supply chain.
Right. And then real quickly, because we got to go to a break, the whole issue of the G20 summit, how was that covered? How influential was that?
It was covered. Again, we're so self-obsessed at the moment. The riots in France,
climate change,
Ukraine and Brexit, that, you know, there's only so much space in the newspapers and so much time on radio and television.
Okay, and we're going to get back to that here in just a moment with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Again, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate Tom's sleeping schedule, since he's some 5 hours ahead of us. But we are talking to him about current events today. And Tom, we were just chatting about the G20 summit and tariffs. And I want to segue over very quickly to the issue of climate control and Paris and what's happening there in Paris. We're going to get to, I want to spend a lot of time on the issue of Brexit, but let's focus here for a moment on the topic of we talked about the tariffs, the G20 meeting in Argentina. Now the issue of what's happening in France, and it's kind of directly related to the topic of a meeting in Poland as well. So let's start with the meeting.
As you know, Macron, the president of France, put up diesel fuel prices as part of his policy against carbon emissions.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question. What is the approximate cost of diesel fuel in France? That
I don't know off the top of my head. It went up something like 10%.
Okay, and that's
and the fact is that in France, most of the people who complain were people who live in the countryside, and they need to use their cars more. Mm-hmm. And they've always been encouraged to use diesel. And of course, most of the poorer people in France live in the countryside. And so it's going to hit them harder. And that's the reason why they were complaining so loudly.
Complaining? They're rioting. They're practically destroying Paris.
A British understatement.
Yes. This is significant.
But the fact is that Macron, who came into office saying, I am going to change things. I am not going to give in like all my predecessors did. I'm going to make tough decisions, and I'm going to stick by them. And he's collapsed.
Well, by the way, let me just make a comment. This is the one compliment for the year. We're practically finished with it. Last week, you predicted this. I just want to make mention of that.
Yeah, well,
I mean, you're stunned
I'm glad I'm sitting down.
Yeah, I know you're stunned. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us. Okay, he has backed down, and yet, apparently, the rioters are not satisfied.
No, it's a bit like, you know, they've smelled blood, and now they're going to go in for the kill. You know, it's animalistic almost.
Okay.
It's like the two stags. One gets a bit tired, rolls over. The other one doesn't walk away. He takes his antlers and just stabs away.
Right. All right, but what impact will this have? And we're not going to get into the details on this per se. We'll talk about it in relationship to Brexit in a few minutes. I do want to remind folks that will be coming up here in a moment with Tom Arms. Tom, what about President Macron's relationship with the European community, the European Union? He was seen as the future successor for Angela Merkel, who was considered the de facto leader of the European Union.
Okay. It's difficult to say. They have a fixed term presidency.
Right.
So he has another 4 years to recover from this.
Okay.
That's a long time.
Will he recover? Will he be able to recover?
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
It certainly substantially weakened him, because he did say, I'm going to be different from all my predecessors. I'm not going to give in to the mob and mob politics like they did.
All right.
And it makes it very difficult for him in the future.
Well, let's look at this.
He's going to have to make a stand somewhere else, and he's going to have to succeed if he's going to do what he intends to do, and if he's going to make his mark in Europe the way he wants to.
Well, let's look at this in relationship to the climate control meeting being conducted there in Poland. By the way, a large meeting, thousands of people in attendance. And of course, it's
And you know what's interesting, too, is that the meeting is being sponsored, partially sponsored by a coal company.
Uh-huh. Well,
because the Poles are Europe's biggest producer of coal. And they're trying to showcase their coal industry at the climate change conference. This has made a lot of people very angry. But the Polish government is absolutely adamant. They take a line very similar to President Trump, and that is, we're not going to cut back on our mining of coal unless we are assured that the big countries, and they name the United States, mm-hmm. Are going to be part of this climate change agreement. Screw you.
Well,
we're going to carry on unless the big polluters fall in line.
Well, and the big polluters will accept that for being U.S. one of them. But I will say that the U.S. has done more to reduce its pollution than many other countries, most of the other countries. China and India, they're all big coal users, and they've not necessarily reduced their consumption or usage.
I think, under the climate change agreement, they have certain dispensations because the economy is at a certain stage.
The largest economy in the world is China. Fastest growing economy.
Second largest.
Oh, okay. Second largest. And fastest growing is China. So I would argue that there's a great deal of, hesitancy and distrust here. And I would argue that what we're seeing in France is a perfect example of that. I don't think that, and by the way, we're going to see other countries, I understand, that are going to be challenging the climate change commission.
Possibly. I think there's a general agreement that something has to be done about climate change. I mean, you had, right. I understand Sir Richard Attenborough is as big in the States as he is here, sort of the most respected naturalist in the world, mm-hmm. who simply says that if we don't do something about climate change, you're seeing the extinction of civilization and much of natural life.
We're hearing all sorts of outrageous statements. Okay, let's move on to another.
Well, we don't know that they're outrageous. That's the problem.
Well,
It's a bit like the next topic, which is Brexit.
I know. Which will segue into Brexit, because I know they're related. But very quickly, the interesting story about Europe's fishing wars, and of course, Great Britain and France particularly, having to do with scallops. And I know that we're going to segue into the issue of Brexit here in just a moment. But I was fascinated. Apparently, the French are very, very protective of certain scallop grounds in the English Channel.
Yeah, and under agreement with the British,
mm-hmm.
It's a bit strange, this agreement. For part of the year, the French, in order to preserve the scallop grounds, don't allow their fishermen to fish in them.
Mm-hmm.
But the British are. And I think a big part of it is that the French fishermen are angry that the British are allowed to enter these grounds to fish the scallop,
mm-hmm.
whom people are trying to protect. And the French fishermen, who have to earn their living, are not. And this is a real problem right throughout Europe when it comes to fishing. You have a lot of fish, especially mm-hmm. in the North Sea and the North Atlantic and the Baltic area. Those cold areas, those cold seas, they create lots of very good edible fish, in particular cod. Mm-hmm. And what's happened over the centuries is that they become overfished.
Okay, and this is was interesting because, there were vessels actually crashing into one another. Fascinating story. All right, we're going to take a quick break on that and come back and talk about a related issue, and that is Brexit. This is going to be an interesting conversation with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. Sherlock Holmes offered the solution to the current Brexit conundrum admirably when he told Dr. Watson in the Barrow Coronet, "When you have excluded the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth." At the moment, the two possibilities before Parliament are the deal negotiated by British Prime Minister Theresa May and crashing out with no deal whatsoever. The latter would be the result of the rejection of the first if no plan B, C, or D appears on the political horizon. The first possibility will be rejected by Parliament because it turns what used to be Imperial Britain into a colony of Europe dominated by historic enemies France and Germany. The United Kingdom would be indefinitely tied to the EU and yet left without any say in the rules that govern it. Its ability to strike trade deals with other countries would be severely hampered, and Northern Ireland would be effectively hived off. In return, the UK would regain control of its immigration policies. We will call this deal Option 1, and using the Holmes formula, rule it out as it is impossible that Parliament will approve it. So we move to Option 2. A no-deal Brexit. First, the plus side. Immigration is controlled. Trade deals can be negotiated. Payments to the EU are stopped. The European courts cease to have jurisdiction in Britain. Now the negatives. The economy will shrink by up to 9% overnight. Hundreds of thousands of jobs will be lost as foreign companies move operations to EU countries. The pound will collapse. Inflation will rise. Troubles could restart in Northern Ireland. And tariff barriers would go up between Britain and its main trading partners on the continent. MPs would, in effect, be voting to make every single one of their constituencies substantially poorer. The only members of the House of Commons likely to consider Option 2 are the members of the European Research Group. They total 62 out of 650 MPs. In fact, an overwhelming majority of the House of Commons, 450, voted to remain in the EU in the 2016 referendum. So, Option 2 can be placed firmly into the impossible box. Having knocked out the two possibilities currently on the table, we have to start looking for the improbable plan B, C, or D. The one that appears to be gaining ground at the moment is that the government accepts that leaving the EU was a bad idea. The referendum was a mistake. Brexit should be cancelled, and we should return to the European fold with a renewed determination to bend the supranational body to the British will. This is Option 3. It would tear both the Conservative and Labour parties apart, further exacerbate divisions within the country at large, create a constitutional crisis, and destroy any remnants of faith in British political leaders, as both parties have pledged to accept the results of the referendum. But using the Holmes formula, this improbable scenario appears at the moment to be the most likely final result. The problem is how to persuade a large proportion of the British population that this is the case. The best way is to let them reach this conclusion on their own. Brexiteers are convinced that a better deal is out there. It just needs tough-talking British negotiators to put the Eurocrats in their proper place. Britain needs to go back to the negotiating table, if need be with a completely different government. It needs to bang its head against the Brussels brick wall again and again and again. It needs to prove that the unpalatable and improbable Remain option is the only option. They need to be able to say to the British public, "We did our best, and then a hell of a lot more." And then, maybe, just maybe, the British public will accept remaining in the EU.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And finally, as promised, we're going to get to Brexit. A lot going on. Tom, things seem to be pretty heated there in the UK. I saw where Nigel Farage has left UKIP. That's a party that he started. The United Kingdom Independent Party, am I correct of that?
UK Independence Party.
Independence Party. And then I know it's related to a dispute related to Tommy Robinson, but also Nigel Farage was an avid proponent of Brexit. And so I'm wondering what happens there.
I don't think his leaving it has nothing to do with Brexit.
Oh, really?
UKIP has become less of a force in favor of Brexit and more of a force against Islam and immigration. And that's why it is linked up with Tommy Robinson, who is very much against what he believes is the Islamization of the UK. Nigel Farage has always argued that he is not a xenophobe. He has nothing against Islam. He's in favor of religious toleration and religious freedom. His main cause is Europe and leaving it.
Right, the Brexit. Now, I wondered what impact that would have on the Brexit negotiations, any at all?
None.
Okay.
None. Total sideshow.
Okay, I wanted to talk about that, just get that out of the way. Well, what's the future of Brexit? I know that Prime Minister Theresa May is about to conduct a vote. Am I correct on this within her party?
Yes, on the 11th of December, on the day that I'm giving a lecture on the European Union. So it should be very interesting.
Oh, and you, of course, have all the details at that point.
Absolutely. Well, I won't have the result. I'm giving a lecture on the history of the European Union.
But okay. Now, as I understand it, the European Court has said that the United Kingdom can, at any moment, just leave the European Union without any further ado. There's no.
No. That's not wrong.
Oh,
it can leave Article 50. That is it. Article 50. What it did was, in order to leave the EU, Parliament had to vote to invoke something called Article 50. Which sent in motion a set of negotiations that would eventually result in Britain's departure from the EU.
Mm-hmm.
What this judgment is that at any time, Britain can decide, and that could be the British Parliament or the British government or the British referendum, whatever, how it decides is up to them, but it can decide that it wants to ditch Article 50 and effectively remain a member of the EU. It can do that unilaterally. It does not need the permission of the other 27 countries, which is what was previously thought.
Okay. This is important because
it is important
because we were thinking that in order for the United Kingdom to re-enter the European Union, it was going to require a whole new set of negotiations. What I'm hearing from you then, Tom, is if the decision is reversed and the United Kingdom determines to stay in the European Union, it can do so without...
Unilaterally. Up until the 29th of March next year.
Okay. And now we're looking to a vote on the 11th of December. What is that vote going to be? I mean, when I say that, what are they voting on? And who's doing the voting?
This is the House of Commons, Parliament, is voting on whether or not to accept the deal that Mrs. May has negotiated.
Okay, before you go any further.
At the moment, the arithmetic is solidly against her.
Okay, now if they choose not to go with her proposed departure structure, does that mean the Parliament will then establish its own departure structure, or will it mean that Theresa May lose the confidence of her party and there's going to have to be an election for a new prime minister? What happens if the Parliament chooses not to accept the proposed departure structure?
Well, in fact, there was another vote yesterday, which was also very important. Other bit of news. And that was that Parliament voted that it was allowed to have it could put forward its own plans. Now, previously, it wasn't going to be allowed to do this, but now it would be allowed to put forward its own suggestions on what should be done.
Wait.
The government has 21 days in which to put forward its alternative suggestion if Parliament votes down Mrs. May's deal on the 11th of December.
I'm struggling here. Why is it was discovered that the Parliament had this permission? Why is that a new discovery? Did Parliament not have...
Because it's usually... The tradition is that the government puts forward the proposals,
mm-hmm.
and it's the government's responsibility to formulate the proposals. And then Parliament can offer amendments or they can vote them down. But they, generally speaking, do not put forward their own proposals.
Okay. So
this time they will be able to put forward their own proposals. And given the complexity of the issue, it just adds another layer of complexity to the whole thing. It's a complete dog's dinner.
Okay, now here's a quick question for you. This vote taking place on the 11th, you have until the 22nd. If the vote is not in favor of Theresa May's proposal...
No, we have 21 days.
But wait, if the 11th is the decision date for accepting current plan.
21 days, so it takes them to January.
Okay, but that's the 11th is the initial vote. But you said Parliament has 21 days from right now to come up with its own plan. Is that correct?
No. The government has 21 days to come up with an alternative if its plan is voted down, which it almost certainly will.
Okay, so that's 11th. So that brings it all the way to the end of December. Strikes me that will Parliament be taking a Christmas holiday break?
They might get maybe an hour off to eat a mouthful of turkey.
It's going to be a contentious Christmas, isn't it?
A little bit of Christmas pud.
It's going to be a contentious Christmas.
Loss of port.
All right. Before we move on to other items, your predictions at this point.
Well, this is really difficult. There won't be another general election because they don't want Jeremy Corbyn in office. He's
okay.
They'll do almost anything to keep Jeremy Corbyn out of office. And so the Conservatives will not vote in favor of a general election or allow a general election. And you need 2/3 of Parliament to say, yes, we'll have a general election.
So... does that mean that Theresa May will remain as prime minister then?
Well, not necessarily, but I should think the chances are yes.
Okay.
At the moment, I would say that.
All right.
It is known she needs 48 letters of no confidence from Conservative MPs for them to force an election for a new leader. At the moment, there are 25.
Well. She's
letters.
Okay.
It's just over halfway there. But should she be badly defeated next week, then a lot more letters could be tabled.
All right.
That could force a leadership election. But the EU has made it absolutely clear they're not going to make any more concessions.
Understood.
Well, so whoever comes in is going to be faced with the same deal.
Well, I understand that. I want to move on to another issue associated with the European community here. I understand where you're coming from. Let's talk here briefly about Russia and the concerns. And of course, we mentioned earlier President Trump and China. Of course, the U.S. is now challenging Russia's actions related to missile technology. And of course, we've got the disputes in the Ukraine. How serious is this for the European community?
It's very serious. It also comes, probably wasn't reported, and that is the head of MI6 recently gave a press conference, a very rare event in itself. MI6 is the secret service that mm-hmm. James Bond used to work for, or still works for if he's around. And he said that we've had over 1,000 attempted cyber attacks,
mm-hmm.
Most of them from Russia, some from China. But like 80% from Russia, over 1,000 cyber attacks in the past year, which have been thwarted. So those are the ones we know about. And that Britain, he said, has to develop a effectively second strike attack, a second strike ability in cyber attack, in cyber warfare.
All right.
We have to be able to counter it with a, with a second strike.
No, I understand that. Here's a quick question for you, Tom, because we're running out of time here. I want to get to this issue. The topic of the Ukraine, the obvious muscle flexing of Russia and Vladimir Putin. Is there a sense that we're entering into another Cold War environment?
Oh yeah, we're definitely entering into another Cold War. There's no doubt about it.
Wow.
I mean, you know, people here have been sensing that. I mean, Putin today has responded. NATO foreign ministers basically gave the go-ahead to deploy more INF weapons on Tuesday. They gave that go-ahead, and Putin simply said, "Well, if you're going to do that, we're going to we're going to build more ourselves."
All right.
So that's been his response. As for the question of Crimea, they're letting ships back into the Sea of Azov, but any ship that tries to go into the Sea of Azov is being searched by the Russians.
Right. No,
so it's not freedom of navigation. They don't care about the rule of law.
Well, and of course we've got to hand it to President Trump. He has been challenging Russia, especially on the issue of missiles, but also I would argue so has NATO, and of course
you hand it to him, I won't.
I will. Well, we know that. I had to, and of course, and we're about to go to break. But my question to you: what does this do to the future of NATO?
Well, at the moment, NATO is united behind this issue, but the issue of INF has, when it came up in the 1980s, it was a sticky issue and a divisive one within the alliance at the time, and I think it could become one again. There are people within NATO who say, by basing INF weapons in Europe, you make Europe more of a target. And there are other people who say you protect Europe. And that debate rages on.
Well, and we will be continuing this conversation with you, Tom. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this evening. We're going to wrap things up here in just a moment. We're always looking forward to the casual and, lighter side of life. And we've got one related to Instagram. Stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Just very quickly to remind you, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. There are two items that I want to touch on very, very quickly, and then we'll get to the issue of Instagram. One of them actually seems to be related to Instagram. All three of these items, as a matter of fact, have to do with modern technology. Very quickly, Tom, Netflix being audited by the British tax man. Is there a question as to whether Netflix has been fully transparent about its financial issues?
This is a problem that they're having with all the social media companies.
Mm-hmm.
They're basing themselves in a low tax company. And channeling all their revenues through that company or country, and paying the low taxes there, and paying no taxes in the UK or the minimal taxes. And it's not just Netflix. It's also Google and Facebook are doing the same thing. This is the first time Netflix has been audited there.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, another item, new technology. India using drones to deliver medical supplies.
Yeah, they're actually setting up air corridors.
Wow.
Between the hospitals to deliver urgent medical supplies, organ transplants, and things like that.
Wow, that's impressive. They're setting up the corridors right now. Have they yet to begin the process?
I think they've done a few trial runs, but you know this they intend to be a permanent thing. There'll be air corridors which will be reserved specifically for these drones to carry urgent medical supplies.
And considering the large,
I think it's the reason why it's so important in India. If you've ever been to India, is that on the ground the traffic is so thick that you really just can't move.
Well, that and also you've got large vast areas of rural countryside.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this it's a novel concept, and I think it would be worth paying close attention to. I look forward to future conversations on this topic as well. And then we'll wrap it up, Tom, since we're on the internet issue as well, new technology. Instagram pictures for guests? Tell me about this.
Yeah, well, this is something I thought you'd be particularly interested in, as it's something for the man who has everything.
Oh, okay.
If you happen to be on holiday in Switzerland, staying at an Ibis hotel, you can now hire a specialist to take your Instagram pictures and arrange for them to be put up on Instagram, suitably airbrushed, and also with the occasional celebrity in the background. $100 a pop.
Well, you know, I guess they these are folks that are too busy to bother with selfies.
Yeah, they're too busy. The idea is this means you can spend more time at the bar.
I understand. And you don't have to carry around a selfie stick. Just sort of stretch your arm out to take a picture and get the background.
Yeah, you just hand the phone over to the concierge and he arranges it all.
$100, $100 per click?
I think $100 per posting or something. You know, it's outrageous. But I'm sure you can afford it.
Well, thank you. The problem is I don't have time. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, look forward to chatting with you next week as we get closer to the December 11th vote with Prime Minister Theresa May. I gather that is this the topic of discussion throughout the United Kingdom at this point?
There isn't any other.
How about that? Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this evening. Tom, thanks for being with us. Look forward to next week.
Thank you, Lockwood. Good night.
Good night. Viewpoints on around the world again here on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of the Talk Station.